Mr. Fackler, we're going to go to you with story number six, Mr. Fackler. It's coming out of the Miami Herald. One of the issues that we constantly talk about on this podcast is all the fraud associated with condominium associations. Anybody doesn't know, an association in the state of Florida, generally speaking, it's an unpaid position. People volunteer. They live in a building. They serve on a board. And basically, it's a lot of grief. I was on a board for 3 years. I can tell you, it's a pain in the ass. You don't get anything but maybe some free stickers that you can, or free parking stickers. So when somebody comes to visit you, otherwise, that's all you do is get grief. You go to the pool, everybody's up your ass complaining about something. You're in the elevator that complained. So it's kind of, it's a job nobody wants. However, there are some who actually want the job. And the reason they want it is there's all kind of alleged fraud going on, kickbacks. Their brother-in-law gets a contract, this and that, cronyism, things like that. So that's the background, Mr. Fackler. And I'm going to go ahead and read you the headline for a couple of graphs, and I want you to turn around and provide your insights. So here we go. Miami Herald headline, fraud charges at Kendall Condo Association illustrate the need for effective safeguards. And this is actually an op-ed piece that was written by an attorney, specialist condo associations. And she wrote into the Miami Herald, but I thought it was kind of interesting, given the, how much we talk about fraud at associations. So here we go, Mr. Fackler. Alleged thefts at community associations during the last couple of years in Miami-Dade, Miami-Dade County, Southwest Florida, and other parts of the state have shined a spotlight on fraud in condominium associations and HOAs, which are homeowners associations. New laws that add teeth to the criminal and civil penalties for association fraud were unanimously approved by both chambers of the Florida legislature and now await the governor's signature. And these reforms could help the associations that have been victimized. Mr. Fackler, I'll let you sort of discuss what this attorney lays out in terms of how associations can sort of protect themselves and individuals who own in building can protect themselves against some of this fraud. So what was your overall takeaway?
Well, I think a lot of it was helpful as far as, the idea here is that you want to stop any type of fixing elections to secure board seats. That's been an issue. Some of the safeguards is to bar any one individual or company from gaining full control over a community's finances. And what's happening in the case that you just mentioned as well, what is being required is multiple signatories to issue checks, to withdraw funds, make changes to bank accounts, vendor contracts, even insurance policies. Because what's happening is some of these crooks are convincing owners to sign over checks or vendors with one signature. And that was the issue here. So if you have multiple signatories, that would pretty much, put the kibosh on that whole idea. They're also saying that there should be audits, which we've talked about several times a year. Also, insurance for criminal malfeasance, something that I don't think people realize. I mean, there's so much criminal malfeasance going on, maybe you need insurance for that. And they actually have insurance policies for that. So, it's really kind of interesting as far as the different things they can do. I was curious, though. I did not see much about protections for the actual individual residents. Now, I know when they approved this HB 919 last year, it was a 60-page bill. It was reduced to 17 pages. And the biggest thing they had in that was a statewide task force, where residents can actually complain, call in, and that was stripped out of the bill. And and that's the most important thing, right, for a resident. And then also, there was a felony, the idea of there could be felonies, because you notice they talk about criminal charges. No longer felonies, it's a misdemeanor.
So a misdemeanor to commit fraud at a condo association.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's, where's the deterrence? I don't see a deterrence. And I know Jean has mentioned this in the past. He studied this issue. This has really been going on for decades. Why is now all of a sudden that, there's been reforms instituted? Is it possible because there's been spotlight on it from the media? Perhaps that's what it is.
Jean, any thoughts?
A lot of HOAs are criminal organizations.
I think I let Jean say that instead of me.
Do you have any? Yeah, that's the bottom line. And is there any sign? And we talked about this in the first episode of this season,
right?
But you know, there was some stuff taken by the legislature, but it doesn't sound like they went far enough.
No, it's just tinkering around the edges. Oh. What needs to happen is HOAs need to fall under the Sunshine Law so that all their documents, all their records are open to public inspection, open records laws by the public. So anyone can look at them, buyers, sellers, owners, renters, anybody should be able to look at the condo docs, look at the financial audits of these HOA associations. And I think, the more light we shine on them, public light, the less likely they are to do these shenanigans in the darkness, you know?
Forrest, let me ask you a question before we wrap up this podcast. You're renting now. You mentioned during the podcast that you were possibly, you know, maybe you're going to buy a condo sometime in the future or something like that. Do you have any concerns as somebody potentially going to buy a condo just about the associations and some of the shenanigans that go on with sweetheart deals, kickbacks, work supposedly supposed to get done, it doesn't, and at least all kind of conflicts or special assessments down the pipe, if you will. So any thoughts on that, Forrest, as somebody possibly contemplating a condo purchase in the future?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with John and Jean said, you know, it would be great to have all these, you know, all these shenanigans, you say, come to light. It would absolutely be on my radar, of course.
But it wouldn't deter you from buying into a condominium. And I say that as somebody who's owned and lived in many condominiums. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I would go back and buy, so I don't have any problem with that, but Forrest, you wouldn't be spooked by it?
No, okay. I don't think.
Well, that's because Peter, you know these condos intimately from your work. You know the ins and outs of every. You know all the warts. You know the ones that function well. You know the ones that don't. I mean, most people do not. You know, most people have absolutely no idea. You know what special assessments are coming down the pike. You know what a 40-year recertification is. I mean, most people have no clue. And most people, I would bet, when they buy a condo, they don't even look at the condo docs. It's a big stack, and they just sign off on it. And like
300 pages.
Yeah.
And
by the way, Peter served on a board, so he knows.
Mr. Factor, could you remind us the story when you had a condo out in Davie? You sold it to a guy, and then like a month later, the whole roof collapsed.
Yeah. And it was, you know, I was there for about 8 years, and it was during that period where there wasn't a lot of movement in the market. The market wasn't good. It wasn't bad. It was sort of flat. So, so I was able to get, at the point I moved out, I was able to get twice the money that I paid. And the guy moved in within a month that we had one of the big hurricanes, and because I was the top floor of a four-story building, and his entire roof caved in. He had a blue top up there for 2 years. Poor guy.